On this week's show, it's goodbye to Bromley as they win promotion to the Football League. We're from Boss Andy Woodman.
I've enjoyed changing people's lives a little bit. Players, staff and obviously, you know, supporters. That's the biggest thing for me. I've really enjoyed that.
Delight for Erith Town as they make history by reaching the Isthmian League for the first time ever. We hear from goalkeeper Mackenzie Foley after his penalty exploits.
I've never felt a feeling like it, to be honest with you. It's crazy. I can't describe it because it's just like it's a one-off thing.
And from boss Adam Woodward.
Been a lot of critics of me, whether I'm good enough, and obviously was told previously by previous chairmen I was a step sit manager. Well, that didn't work out too well.
Disappointment though for Corinthian as they lose out in that shootout. Boss Michael Golding tries to be philosophical after it all.
Yeah, today we've just fallen on the wrong side of it again, and you're looking for the footballing gods, and it's just, yeah, it's a tough one to take.
And up into the scaffold premier, job well done for Larkfield and New Hyde boss Danny Lye.
The chairman was desperate to play it at home. We wasn't too worried where we played it, but because of the spectacle in the end with all the fans and stuff and how many people turned up, it was a great day for the club.
Hello everyone and welcome to this week's episode of the Kent Only Podcast, sponsored by Sandwich Town Youth FC. It's been a great week of playoff final action with three Kent teams winning promotion, and we're going to hear from all three of them, as well as a side beaten on spot kicks in one of those finals. I'm John Fitch, who has an actual freebie from a supermarket this week. Another one now is a man I've coaxed out of his football hibernation to join me once more. My good friend Matthew Gerrard, how are you, pal?
Not bad, mate, not bad. Season, well, is officially over now, isn't it? But we thought we'd do this, and we may even go one more next week, I think, as well, just to finish it all off. But been a really interesting week this week, hasn't it?
It certainly has. And before we move on, actually, Matt, you've got the latest, the final update of the season from our good friends and our sponsored Sandwich Town Youth FC.
Yep. So, good old Nick sent me some stats through. So the stats for the whole season, Sandwich Town Youth FC, who are starting out. So including friendlies, they played 31, won 21, lost 6, drew 4. League and the Cup, 113, lost 5, drew 3. So really happy to end their season. And next season, they're going to a competitive league in the East Kent Youth League under 12. So anybody with any experience and wants to join, please contact us and we'll pass your details on to Nick. They had their family day and the awards day with over 100 people in attendance, which is absolutely fantastic. Plenty of awards were shared out between the players, the parents and players. Player of the year goes to Thomas Nightingale. Well done, Thomas. Caden Batchelor got players, player of the year. Most improved player chosen by the parents was Oscar Lead and Ollie Cunningham. Well, this is a goal scorer's name. Kobe Smithson. What a name that is. He was a top goal scorer. I have to say thanks for Nick for sponsoring this pod. And well done, mate, setting the team up. So probably, I would say, John, probably in about 12 years' time, we'll be celebrating their promotion to the scaffold.
Absolutely. And I'm sure we'll be talking about Kobe Smithson banging the goals in 12 years' time. I'm absolutely positive.
Yeah. Well, I remember Michael Smithson. Do you remember Michael Smithson?
I don't know.
He used to play for Dover. He's a bit of a non-league legend, and it's nothing to do with him. Michael Buster Smithson. Don't get players with things like that anymore, do you? No players who have a normal name, then they'd have a sort of a crazy middle name that nobody knew about. But Kobe Smithson, leading goal scorer in the scaffold in about 13, 15 years' time.
Absolutely. Well done to all of the lads at Sandwich Town. I'm sure it's been a brilliant season. I hope you have a good summer and get yourselves all ready to go for your next season. And I'm sure you're going to do very well again, because that's a really, really solid start. How was your birthday party at the weekend?
Yeah, my mother-in-law's 70th. Yeah, we went for a nice walk on the White Cliffs of Dover and some cake at the lighthouse. That's a lovely walk with a dog if you've done that. You can carry on to St Margaret's. And then we went out for a meal out in Westgate, which was nice, on the Saturday. And then on Sunday, we had a sort of, I was in a hot tub eating cake. So there you go. Doesn't get much better than that, does it?
Well, for other people, it might not be that great, mate. I'm glad there was no photos.
My daughter was in there and me, but that was about it. Nobody else wanted to get in. But I thought, let's get in the old hot tub, which my sister-in-law has got, which is quite nice, because the weather was quite nice as well on Sunday. So, I enjoyed that. And I hope it was going to solve my aching bones, but it hasn't really at the moment. So
the last time I was in a hot tub, and this is genuinely true, was on Christmas Day. No, someone far more attractive. But it was on Christmas Day in 2022, because when I went and met Fee's family for the very first time, they were staying at a place in Hastings that had a hot tub, and everyone just piled into it. And I was a bit kind of wary of it because obviously I'd never met them before. So we waited till everyone had gone to bed and we just nipped in there and had a bit of a chill in there and a glass of wine about half past 11 on Christmas night, as you do.
If you could, would you have a cut? Would you buy yourself a hot tub?
100%. We've talked about this, but we decided that we need a very secluded spot of our garden and lots of money. But yeah, we would love to have a hot tub.
Apparently they eat up the old electricity, my sister-in-law and brother-in-law, they absolutely swear blind by it. They're always in there, and he does a bit of sport, and he says as soon as he jumps in that hot tub after playing, it eases all his bone problems as well. So we haven't got space in our place, and I don't think we probably utilize it as much as they would. But so again, anybody got a hot tub business? If you can offer us John a discount when he gets his gaff, there you go. Some there.
Absolutely. That would set me right up for a nice old sexy summer if I had a hot tub in the garden to prance around in my cosy to please my new neighbours. They would love that, wouldn't they?
Yeah. Well, at least you're wearing a cosy, mate. That's the main
thing. It'd be like, here, have you seen that fat lad next door? He's never out of that bloody hot tub, but there you go.
Do you know anybody else who's got one? Do you know anybody who's got one? They are popular these days.
Do you know, the only times I've ever been in one have been when I've been staying in Airbnbs. Yeah. I've never actually been to anyone's house and they've gone, oh, we've got a hot tub, do you want to hop in? And do you know what? In all seriousness, those lazy spa things, they're not as robust maybe, but that would do the job, you know. And you can get one of them for £500. But of course, if anybody out there has got a hot tub business, we'd love to give you a shout out on the show in exchange for one of your hot tubs or maybe a contribution towards my growing electric bills. But that would be lovely. Yeah, perfect. Thank you very much. It's our 296th episode this week. And according to one online review, the Ferrari 296 GTS is the epitome of driving pleasure. And at £256,275, I'm certainly never going to be able to prove or disprove that theory. It's got a top speed of 205 miles an hour and can do 0 to 62 miles an hour. Yes, 62, because I had to convert that from kilometres, in 2.9 seconds, which are absolutely the number one qualities required for my daily game of pothole slalom along the A267. Also, apparently, the world record for the most people in a staring contest is 296. And Matt, finally, we can localise one of these, as because that took place last year at Bluewater Shopping Centre. It was a stunt by a TV manufacturer to prove how easy on the eyes their latest TVs are. Sadly, though, the record attempt was on a Thursday. As if it had been on a Saturday, I'd certainly have pointed out what Dover game Matt Gerrard chose over being part of a staring contest.
Sports cars, which... my boss at work just bought himself a sports car. If you had, do you like cars?
No. Well, I like them as a method of transport, but I don't see the point of having one that goes at 205 miles an hour.
Again, so we're having this conversation that maybe as I'm getting close to middle age, well, probably past middle age, should I have a midlife crisis? But if I had some money, I would never think about buying a sports car. I just can't see the point in it.
I've got, and I hold my hands up, I've got a Vauxhall Corsa. I had a Vauxhall Corsa before this. And before that, I had a Ford KA. Because, do you know what? All I need is a car that gets you from A to B, is quite reliable and quite economical. And smaller cars for me fit the bill. Yeah, I think I've got a 1.4 engine, so it's not exactly a slouch. But I don't need a massive car. I don't need a fancy sports car that you can zoom along in, because as I say, I spend most of my time driving, avoiding potholes. So what use is a car that goes at 200 mile an hour to me on my journey? As long as it gets me from A to B, I'm not really bothered. You know, if money was no object, then yeah, I probably would have a nicer car. But then you've got to insure it. It's got more money for the pet. It's just not worth the hassle.
I'm not never really been a car person. So probably by the way, as you see me the way I drive, John, so that's probably a good thing. So
absolutely.
I thought when you mentioned sports car, and our boss at work had one, and he's probably middle-aged, but he can afford this nice little car he's got. But I just think if I had that, I don't think I'd utilise my money on a sports car. But
no, I'll tell you what, there's certainly been a day for having your roof down your convertible today, though, hasn't it? It's been lovely.
But yeah, it's getting really nice now. I'm hoping, I think it's supposed to be nice at the weekend. Well, wife's off again for another trip to London with her mother, doing a trip into London. So I'm home alone with the kids, but one of the kids will be revising. He's got exams next week. Well, the youngest and I will go out and do something for the day.
Oh, revision. I hated revision so much at school. It's just like I could never motivate myself to do it. I think I would rather just be playing Football Manager or whatever the equivalent was. And just
what year was that then? What year's 97, 98?
Would have been Championship Manager 3, I think, would have been my thing. I did my GCSEs. My GCSEs in 98 and my A-levels in 2000. And I certainly remember in probably one of the more ill-advised things I did in my life, I went on holiday to Spain for a week in between some of my exams, which was, I only went with my mum and dad, but so I took my textbooks with me on the plane.
Didn't touch
and
him.
Did very little revision over there. But yeah, I didn't really care by that stage. And do you know what? My exam results ain't the best, but I've done all right for myself, really, haven't I? Anyway, let's get on with the show. We will start at the very top of the non-league pyramid, where we wave goodbye to one of our clubs in the best way possible after Bromley secure promotion to the Football League for the first time in their history at Wembley on Sunday. They twice led against Solihull Moors, but were twice pegged back, but two penalty saves from Grant Smith set them up before the coolest man in the whole of London, Byron Webster, stuck home the decisive penalty after sticking on an EFL captain's armband. It's been a brilliant rise for Bromley, and although it means we won't be hearing from them next season, we couldn't let them go without one final chat with a man who has made the Ravens' dreams come true, boss Andy Woodman, who spoke to Matt earlier this week.
Yeah, it's weird because it's a bit of a come down now, and reality's setting in of the job in hand now to go again and make sure that we can compete in the league above. So, my brain's been sort of, I walked the dog this morning again and sort of started getting my mind in intact for, right, what's the next move and what's the next plan now? What are we going to do? It was a short-lived celebrations as being a manager, that's for sure.
Yeah, if we set back to 2021, I think it was March, you got the job. When you walked into your interview, was it your plan to say within 3 years we'd be a Football League club? What was your remit when you set out?
Exactly that. I said I'll get this football club in the league in 3 years. I never wavered from that, you know. I was slightly disappointed I didn't do it last year, with the way we got into the playoffs and that. It was always my plan. But with football, sometimes you can say things or think things and it doesn't quite always pan out. There's bumps in the road. But I stuck to the plan I put in place. With my staff, and we meticulously sort of detailed out how we was going to do it this year, or how we're going to get the team across the line. Look, it come down to penalties in the end, but I don't think we should sort of, that's what it come down to. But I think we shouldn't underplay the work and the effort we put in for the other 46, 47 games as well. We was bang on point all season.
How difficult, this division with only two up, some clubs with massive budgets who are desperate to get back in there. How difficult is this league? The achievement to get Bromley over that league must be, a magnificent achievement. But how difficult is this league?
It's so hard. And I think it's so unfair, if I'm to be honest, because you've got people that are, owners that are playing with their own money, really. Not sort of like they don't get big parachute payments or certainly big money from the league. TV is very minimal. It's tough for them, and they're gambling their money. That said, you've got some big clubs in the league, some really big clubs that have been Football League clubs and have come down and not got up. So it's a really tough league, and on the budget we had, I'm not disrespecting anyone at our place, but we had to cut our cloth accordingly. I had to be shrewd with the money and actually, make sure I got the right players in and the right loans in. And it's really, it's really non-stop. And for us to, become a Football League club on that budget is phenomenal.
I have to say, we've seen in the Kent area, clubs running before they could run, spending money on the pitch and not doing the infrastructure off it. But as a benchmark, we've said on our show that Bromley, if you showed this benchmark to a lot of clubs, that's how it's done. I've been going to Hayes Lane for probably 20 years, and the ground and the transformation of that place is unbelievable. And I think a lot of credit's got to go behind the scenes as well, hasn't it?
Yeah, when I say about the budget, the chairman was really straight with me when I took the job. This is the budget. I won't waver off it. I won't get emotionally attached, you know, to your demands or your hopes and needs, because I need to build an infrastructure here and make the business sustainable for when we can get up. And I got that. So, you know, I hope no one thinks I'm moaning about the budget. I knew what it was. But the infrastructure is in place and it's continuing to still be in place. So, you know, we're in a great position now. And we've got to make sure that we do well next year and keep this bounce feeling going into next season.
Going back to the game on, what were your emotions like in those penalty shootouts? I saw the celebrations. You hugged your assistant when it went through. Can you sort of pinpoint what your emotions like going in? That was your heart rate going up and down?
Do you know what? When it comes to the penalties, weirdly enough, I was quite relaxed. That might sound really bizarre, and it's easy to say after. And I've got on record of saying, I just really thought we'd win penalties. And I said this to the lads when we got together, you know, just score your penalties. We've got the best goalkeeper in the league by a country mile. And he will make one, if not two, saves in this penalty shootout. Little did I know he'd saved the first two, which really, you know, really put us in a great position. And then when Byron Webster steps up to take his, I couldn't have been more happier for a cooler guy that's been around the league, seen it, done it. And for him to slot it home like that with a smile on his face just sums up Byron. And then really, you know, the jubilation with Alan Dunn, you know, I must mention him because, you know, we've been absolutely rock solid working our socks off, you know, 24/7. People don't realise. At night, he's been ringing me at 12 o'clock, 1 o'clock. We've been talking about the team and this, that and the other. And it really has been an obsession for certainly for me. And I know he's put every bit of effort in as well himself.
If the penalties had gone the other way, would it have been tough for you to lift yourself again?
Well, I got asked that question, how I'd cope if we lost. And I got asked this before it. And I think anyone that knows me, the glass is always half full rather than half empty for me. And I always said, I'm not going to even think about that. We're going to go up. Because I can only control what I can control. So why worry about that and how I'm going to feel until it happens? And then I'll deal with that when it happens. And that was really my mindset. You know, I didn't once think we wouldn't go up. I didn't once think we wouldn't go up last year. And then when it didn't happen, you know, you've got to dust yourself down, lick your wounds and go again. And it just makes you a little bit more resilient. I mean, look, there's 37 years in this game and I've had many ups and many downs and you kind of become a bit, a bit strong and mentally strong with it all. So I didn't allow myself any time to think about that.
Well, as a Bromley, you know, 130 years non-league football. What have you enjoyed about the non-league game since you've been in it the last 3 years before you say goodbye to
it? Nothing at all. do you know what? I have really enjoyed it. I've met some lovely people on the way. And I've enjoyed changing people's lives a little bit, players, staff, and obviously, you know, supporters. That's the biggest thing for me. I've really enjoyed that. It's, you know, we had it at Wembley when we got there in the trophy, seeing all those people smiling. We've had a couple of playoffs where people didn't expect Bromley to get to the playoffs, and then Saturday was the icing on the cake. A football club that a lot of people have supported for a long time. You know, them going away and their little club Bromley is now in the league. So that's the bit I've really enjoyed about non-league. And look, non-league, I really wish it would change its name to, the, you know, the Division 4 or League 4. Or League 3, should I say. Because it isn't non-league. It really isn't. It's the fifth tier of English football and there's crowds in there of 9,000 in some games. You know, that is phenomenal. So I really wish they would change the name non-league because it's so not non-league. It's so professional. It's fantastic.
And where does the hard work starts now, I presume? Getting ready for the Football League. I know you've got to lose your pitch. Again, I think the infrastructure's in place to carry on with the great work they do in the community as well. Does that change your thinking about players coming in with a different pitch or just football's played on the ground? Get on with it.
Yeah, no, look, we'll be looking to always make ourselves stronger. It'll be no different from any other off-season where we'll be looking to do our business and make sure we bring the right characters in, the right players that fit the way we are. I was on the phone to a couple yesterday and literally, yeah, straight back on the horse. You know, again, I said I'm wired a little bit different maybe, but it's no good getting promoted and then just thinking that's enough. You know, you want to make sure that we become a proper football league club now and kick on. Like we've seen a couple of other clubs that have gone up. So that would be my mindset, you know, as we sit here now. I know it's not going to be easy. I know it's not going to be a walk in the park. I'm really aware of that. But look, let's attack next season and pre-season like we have already for the last three or four seasons I've been here.
I said to somebody who I know, a Bromley fan, I texted him on the game, and basically, non-league, you've completed it. You've won the trophy and you've got promotion to the Football League. That it looks good on your CV, but what an achievement. You'll never forget this, will you?
No, do you know what? I hadn't even thought about that. That's really kind and nice of you to say. It's nice on the CV, yeah, for sure. And look, hopefully it makes one or two people sit up and you know, they all see me as this, you know, fun character, you know, at times, you know, done the podcast for a bit of fun. But, you know, underneath all of that, you know, there's a professional, serious manager here that wants to achieve. And so far to date, you know, I've achieved everything I needed to achieve for Bromley, that's for sure.
Right. It's been an absolute pleasure, Andy. I'm sorry we won't be speaking to you next season because you've done it, mate. Go. So I'm sure I'll see you around the scene anyway. But
listen,
from all of us here, congratulations.
Because if I start off badly, I might be sacked and back in that league next year.
I don't think you will be. But all the best, Andy, and thanks for everything.
Thanks
and congratulations.
Yeah, thanks for your
support. It's always a good chat, Andy Woodman. As he said there, he's a character, but a really good manager. And I'm delighted for him and everyone at Bromley. And of course, their loyal band of supporters. What an achievement, Matt.
I have to say, an unbelievable unbelievable of achievement. I always thought if we'd see a Kent side getting promoted to the Football League, it'd probably be Maidstone, and it could happen one day. I think Maidstone can probably do it. And I saw a stat on Twitter, John. I think 20 years ago, their average attendance was like 200. When they got promoted at the National South, it was 600. Now they're averaging 2,000, nearly 3,000, and in the Football League, they're going to be getting 4,000 every week. What's an unbelievable achievement Andy Woodman's done, but I have to say, the owners, board of directors of Bromley Football Club should take an absolute standing ovation at what they've done at that football club. Unbelievable. And also, going back to Andy Woodman, I'm sure we when he got appointed, we were like, goalkeepers don't make good managers.
I actually said that to him, and I remember he took a bit of umbrage with it, and he was like, "Well, yeah, I don't know why people say that." Absolutely incredible. And you know, people were talking about it in the office at the weekend, and they were like, not that aware of Bromley. Obviously, know Andy Woodman because of his good friendship with Gareth Southgate. But one of them was like, he left a job at Arsenal to become the manager of Bromley, and he has been completely justified in that. And I remember when he got the job, you know, we obviously love Neil Smith a lot. And I think a lot of people were like, that's a bad decision by Bromley to get rid of Neil Smith. But Andy Woodman has come in and he has taken them to the next level. He's done an incredible job. You know, the team are set up in a way that they're so hard to beat, you know, and they've had a brilliant season, you know, that they have rightly got promoted because they've been knocking at the door for the last couple of years. And the thing is under Andy Woodman, they have got better and better every year. And I've got no doubts that he's got some work to do between now and August. But I'm 100% sure that come the start of August, they'll be primed and ready to go. And I'm not saying they're going to do a Wrexham, but I think they're going to certainly put a few noses out of joint in the Football League next season.
Again, a definite outside bet for the playoffs, I'm sure. I think, he's kept the core of the team, isn't he? Michael Cheek, over 150 National League goals. What a striker he is. Kept it, you know, added a little bit of experience, tinkered with it here. Interesting, I didn't look back on his interview on the telly. He said, oh, I've got rid of some bad eggs. I haven't really looked back who they got rid of. But just an interesting, all season they were in the top five, I think, from about September. Unbelievable achievement. And they remind me a little bit of, this is going back a few years, something like Wickham, you know, when they got promoted. They won the, you know, they won the trophy, then got promoted with Martin O'Neill, and they've become a solid Football League side. And I can't see Bromley not being like that as well now. I think compared to the likes of Sutton, who came up as well, I know they've got to rip the pitch up. You just feel that Bromley are in such a good place off the pitch that you feel that they can only go one way. The crowds will be up, and I think the supporters, you know, will stick with them as well.
Absolutely. I think, You know, they've got them. They've built an identity for themselves. You know, and you mentioned that the tweet that you saw earlier, Matt, probably because I retweeted it, but it was at Kent Stats, which is a really good Twitter account. But they've got these are the averages. 20 years ago, they were in the Isthmian League South and averaged 220. 10 years ago, they were in the National South and averaged 629. 5 years ago, they were in the National League and averaged 1,479. This season, 2,636 was their average attendance. Next season, who knows what they're going to do in terms of attendance? But, you know, people turned up in their numbers to watch them on Saturday. And I saw some video footage from inside the stand of supporters absolutely loving it. And, you know, this is when you're a non-league football supporter, this is the dream, isn't it? You know, I mean, I know Dover obviously got to the playoffs and lost in the semi-final. But for you as a Dover fan, that must have been, oh, my God, can you imagine if we get into the Football League? Well, Bromley have gone and done it. And, you know, it's full credit to Andy Woodman, all the players, but also the owner who's come in. You know, he took over the club and he set his vision out. He set his stall out to get them into the Football League and he's done it. You know, they've done incredibly well. They are, well, I'm just so proud of them, you know, because I've been watching non-league games at Bromley for years. And the first actual non-league game I saw was at Hayes Lane about 11 years ago. I just started a new job and I started a new job on the Monday. And on Tuesday night, it was Bromley against Chelmsford. And I went to that game. I was covering Chelmsford. It was the first game I'd been to. In a little while, and I walked into Hayes Lane. And honestly, if someone said to me, this club's destined for the Football League that night, I would have found that a hard sell. But the way that they've built it, the way that they've done it, it's incredible. And, you know, massive well done to everybody involved at Bromley. And we're sad we won't be talking about you on the show next season. And we may never talk about you again. We'll keep an eye on your results, to be honest. But, you know, it's been an absolutely brilliant ride. And Andy Woodman, you know, he's a brilliant interviewee. I really enjoyed that one, Matt. And, you know, fair play to him. And I hope that he has a great time. And, you know, it was really interesting when he said there, you know, the National League should be called League Three, or it is almost a Football League styled vision now. And it is in everything but name. And, you know, he has come into it, a division that he didn't know that well, and he's absolutely smashed it. And fair play to him. And I'm sure he's had a very good week celebrating. He knows he's got to work hard, but he'll probably still be on cloud nine, won't he?
I would have thought about that. A shout out for people like Mash, who's been on the show before, big Bromley fan. He was one of the 226 20 years ago. So, and again, as a non-league fan, it'll take things to get used to, because I reckon next season, John, if we did continue doing Bromley, this is not Kent Nollie podcast, I wouldn't be able to ring Andy Woodman up and say, can I have a quick chat, would I? Things will change for Bromley. Probably certain things for the hardcore non-league people that probably realise maybe not for the better, but you've got to embrace that. With the chance of me ringing up Andy Woodman next season when he's a Football League manager and getting an interview, probably zip, aren't they?
Well, I wouldn't necessarily say so, but there will be a lot more demands on him and media-wise and everything like that. And, you know, they've announced this new deal today, haven't they, where more games are going to be shown on TV and things like that. And I saw a Bromley fan saying, let's hope they can do something with the cameras because I don't want the stand to be split in half all season. And, you know, there are various things that they've got to do. And obviously getting the pitch right will be a big one for them as well. But, you know, I'm sure that they've got the best possible people doing that because they have worked so hard to get this. They're not going to throw it away, are they?
They're too well run, John. And they've got the support base, which I think is absolutely key. You know, there'll be sides will be bringing, you know, 750, 1,000 supporters. So they're going to be averaging 3,500, 4,000 next season, which the extra income they could bring is absolutely fantastic for the club.
Absolutely. And to the Bromley fans out there, we're so pleased for you. But please keep listening because we're still going to be banging out some good content. We just won't be talking about Bromley. But yeah, well done, everybody at Bromley. Their win, of course, means we've just got one team in the National League Premier Division next season. So it'll be all eyes on Ebbsfleet. And we've only got three sides in the National League South as well, after Chatham failed in their bid to secure what would have been an amazing third promotion in a row as they were beaten 3-0 at home by Enfield Town in Monday's final. And they weren't in the best form coming into the game. And I'm sure the disappointment is still pretty raw for the Chats at the moment, but they can look back on a bloody great effort, can't they, Matt?
Yeah, I didn't expect to, you know, back-to-back promotions, nearly triple promotions. didn't expect them to do so well this season. Out of all the Kent sides, I probably had them more middle to bottom of the table. So shows what they've done. And I'm sure next season, again, another club, 3,000 there again. Again, you look at their attendances probably 3-4 years ago, they would have gone up the same sort of speed as Bromley have done. So they'll capitalise on that, be one of the favourites, I'm sure, next season to go up again in quite a competitive division. But yeah, great season for them. I don't think they should be too disappointed, so what they've achieved, but they're clearly going in the right direction.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a tough old league next year, actually, the Isthmian Premier. There's some very strong sides
clubs coming down into it.
Absolutely. Well, do you know, have you seen the lad on Twitter who's done his predictions?
He said Dover will win it, didn't he?
Dover will win the league, he said. And I don't know what his psychiatrist said, but he said Dover will win the league. But no, it's going to be a tough division. And I just hope, from Chatham's point of view, that this wasn't their one chance. I'm sure that they will continue to build. They get the big crowds in. You know, they get crowds that Dover will be envious of, Matt. You know, and I'm sure that they'll continue to invest in the team. You know, I would worry about making sure that they get goals in the team, because you can't keep relying on Chris Dixon, who's knocking on. So I think they do need to bring in a few fresh faces maybe after that disappointment. But I'm sure Kevin Hake is already thinking about it. And there's no reason why they won't be up there again in, as we say, what will be a very competitive league. And, you know, you can't take anything away from a team who's won back-to-back promotions and got to a playoff final, because that is absolutely incredible. And you know, fair play to them all. As I say, disappointment, of course. But it won't be a place that you as a Dover fan are looking forward to going next season.
No, it's going to be tough from there. It'll be interesting to see when they release it. Again, they've been quite loyal to some of the players that have come up with them. So it'll be interesting what their retain list and where they go for players. Arguably, out of the sides in the division, I think probably Chatham and Folkestone, with what they've brought, probably have a bigger budget than Dover and Dartford. So maybe the tide's turning on them from some of our Kent sides. So, but not necessarily have the best budgets for how you deal with it. But I'm sure Chatham will be looking to go again next season. Again, particularly, you know, take away Monday's result. It's been a fortress at home, and I'm sure those big crowds will flock back next season.
Yeah, and I know Kevin Hake has said before he's hoping that next year he can get a bit of help from the fixture plans as well, with them being on opposite weekends to Gillingham, which would only cement their popularity, I think, with other people, with other supporters being able to come and watch them and seeing how they go from there. But yeah, it has been incredible for Chatham. And as I say, next season, it will be interesting to see how the Isthmian Premier shapes up. Of course, if you're not aware, Chichester have also joined that league after their 5-0 away win in the playoff final at Three Bridges. I mean, you saw them at Ramsgate on the Tuesday. If I'd said to you they were going to be 5-0 in the final, would you believe me?
No, I didn't know. Again, Three Bridges must have had an off day, because I didn't see it that they, unless they changed the time. So they scored after about a minute, didn't they? So opens up the game as a contest. But yeah, I didn't think they had five goals in them. They probably had about five touches in the second half, and one of them was when they scored in. So, but yeah, Chichester's nice part of the world. But yeah, Three Bridges I thought were going to win it, but Chichester, farewell. So Ramsgate, at least they lost to the eventual champions.
And obviously you mentioned Folkestone in there. They've signed Johnny Henley today to be their goalkeeper for next season, the former Tunbridge Angels stopper. And Craig Wanderers moving into their new stadium. So they'll be confident being competitive. And of course, Craig Valley will be in there as well. So we've only had four teams in that division this year, but next season we've got both the Crays, Cray Valley and Cray Wanderers, Chatham, Dartford, Dover, Folkestone. It's going to be quite something, that division next year. And I think we're going to be doing a lot more Isthmian Premier coverage than we've probably ever done before, Matt. So that'll be quite
a sexy division, John, with big clubs in it.
Absolutely. Let's move down to the Skeffel now, where Erith Town made history on Monday by securing a promotion to Step 4 for the very first time after edging out Corinthian on penalties after a 1-1 draw at Bayliss Avenue in front of 671 supporters. The game was almost a carbon copy of the Skeffel Challenge Cup final between the two sides, with Michael Hagen giving the Hoops the lead in the first half and Erith Town equalising again, as they did in the final, 4 minutes from time with a goal that was credited to Harry Taylor, although whether he did get a touch on the cross, pretty inconclusive from my angle, but I don't think anyone at Ewer Town actually cares. It went to penalties and Mackenzie Foley was the hero for the home side as he saved from both Oscar Housego and Sam Buick to take his side into the Eastern League South East and spark jubilant celebrations from the home fans and the players. And after the game, I caught up with two of the main men and here they are together. So firstly, we're going to hear from the goalkeeper, the penalty shootout hero Mackenzie Foley, and then we're going to hear from the Dockers boss, Adam Woodward.
Unbelievable. I've never felt a feeling like it, to be honest with you. It's crazy. I can't describe it because it's just like it's a one-off thing. Like, I've never felt that before, but it felt great.
Like, what's your penalty record normally like?
Yeah, really good. Really good. I'm known for my penalties sort of thing. Like, yeah, so, my Twitter is just full of my penalty saves. And, yeah. So I back myself a bit on penalties, yeah.
So you were confident going into the shootout?
Yeah, very, yeah. I even slowed the game down a little bit just to make sure we did get into pens. Yeah, so I felt more confident there than we did in the 90 minutes.
In the game itself, it was very similar to the cup final we had a few weeks ago against Corinthians, wasn't it? And you just kept plugging away and got the goal in the end.
Yeah, that's it. That's all we do, really, is just work. We push the whole game, 90 minutes, just push. Because we've got the quality there, and sometimes we just can't find that finishing touch. But yeah, we guaranteed we will in that 90 minutes, we'll get a goal. So that's what it was, yeah.
It's been an amazing season, hasn't it? You won two cups and now this as well. Yeah. And history for the club as well.
Yeah, it's amazing. It feels amazing. I would have been happy with just one silverware, to be honest. But to go and win the two cups and the promotion is just unbelievable. Yeah, I love it.
I think Ewer Town have always been a little bit of underdogs this season. And to do what you've done, it's credit to all of the players and your manager as well.
Yeah, yeah. It's a great bunch of lads. Like, everyone gets on. Normally there's one or two that don't really mix, but every single player in here I consider mates. So yeah, really good bunch.
You've got a lot of players who are quite young that have played a lot of games of football. Yeah. Does that make a difference?
I feel it does, to be fair. They've played a not as high a level and whatever, but their mind, they just want to show, they want to prove that they're worthy or whatever. So yeah, it does add a little fire in the belly.
And the club's got a great youth system as well, and that must help.
Yeah, it does, yeah. Yeah, I've had a few players this year coming up from the 18s, 23s. Yeah, there's a lot of rotation here.
It's good. And now it's life at step four. How excited are you about that?
Oh, I can't wait. Can't wait. Yeah, I'm confident, to be fair. I've played in step four before, Tyrone and Mitchum with SCR. But yeah, I feel confident that we'll be all right.
And obviously, Ewer Town, you know, moved here this season to this stadium and everything like that. I suppose it's been challenging for you all, but you've got your rewards.
Yeah, to be fair, it's a move for the better. Like, so here, if it wasn't the best pitch to play on, and this at the start of the season was immaculate. It's had its wear and tear now, but yeah, it was great. Yeah, but I think we mixed well. We moulded to it nicely. So yeah, it's nice.
And just finally, you're just delighted to be promoted.
Absolutely buzzing, yeah. I can't explain it again. Like, absolutely buzzing.
I'm very happy today. Very happy, and a lot of sacrifices have gone into this. Not only from the people in the club, my family suffered this year. And I heard Andy Woodman say it yesterday about how mentally drained it is, and people don't realise as a football manager you don't ever switch off, and I don't. And there's been a lot of critics of me, whether I'm good enough, and obviously was told previously by previous chairmen I was a step sit manager. Well, that didn't work out too well. So fair play. Do you know what? I just steer the ship. I'm just the one who steers the ship. I promised these players if they got in the playoffs they'd win them, and I don't lie.
Unbelievable to go away in the first game and win at Glebe, and then to beat a Corinthian side who are always hard to beat. You kept plugging away today, didn't you?
Yeah, we did. We just needed one chance. I told the players, you'll get a chance, and we got one chance.
The game itself, obviously, very similar to the cup final you had against
them. Yeah, it was terrible.
It weren't pretty.
It was going to come down to a chance, and like I said, I thought their goal was a little bit against the run of play, but listen, Michael Golding's worked wonders there. I don't deny, I think he's probably the best manager in the league. Don't deny that. I've said that from the start. He gets something out of his teams, and yeah, he's unlucky to be on a losing side today.
Great celebrations at the end, and I suppose you say you've put a lot into the club this year and everything. The relief must be huge.
Yeah, because I want to be a step four manager.
And you are.
And there's been times this year I could have jumped ship and been a step four manager, but I'm not doing it. It's Ewer Town. I'm here. I'm an Ewer Town man, and I want to get Ewer Town. I made a promise to the chairman 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, whenever I took the job. I promise you now, I'll get us in step four, and we've done it.
I just speaking to the chairman very briefly, and he said, you know, he doesn't know why people are surprised, because this has been a project, and you've done it the right way, haven't you? You've built the youth team, you've brought your young players in, you've got a lot of experienced heads out there, and you're now reaping the rewards.
We are, and listen, fair play, there's people, like I said, that have worked so hard for this, and like, I'm just lost for words at the moment, really. It's going to take a while to realise where we're at. And look, we've got some big games next year with Margate, Ramsgate, so just a couple. And look, to be in the Bostic League is tremendous.
I spoke to you, 6 weeks ago on Good Friday, and I said to you, this could be the best 6 weeks in your club's history. And you've done it, three cup finals and three wins. And you know, what credit to you and your players.
Yeah, credit to them, not only me. Listen, I get all the credit, don't I, because I'm the manager, it is what it is. But the management team have been tremendous. They've been superb for me this year, and they've got to take full credit as well.
And you just said Margate, Ramsgate, etc. next season. Hard work starts now, or is it
a few weeks off? I need a break. And the only positives that were in the Bostic is that my wedding was last Saturday in July, so if we was in a scuffle, I'd have missed the game. So that's the only positive now. We can go back a week later for pre-season. Everything can, we can recharge a little bit more, because that's took a lot out of them players. Them players have been superb. They've run through brick walls like everyone else. So, no, really well done.
Is it a case of these players have got you here, they're going to get a chance next season, or will you look to strengthen?
Listen, you know the money in Step 5 is crazy. These boys will be wanted men in Step 5 next year. It's whether they go for the money or whether they want to play the level. We haven't got loads of money. But what we do have is we have a football club. We have a club and a togetherness that not many clubs have. And we've just got to make sure we can keep as many of them together as we can. I'll sit down with them. I've got to sit down with the chairman, try and work out something. And yeah, it's been hard work, and it's been about getting players. And what people forget is you've got players in this team. Mackenzie Foley, weren't really a number one at this level, he's come on, he's proved himself. JJ, I picked up end of last pre-season, he came the last game, weren't good enough to play step four supposedly, he's been tremendous, hit 100 games. Lalic, I've picked out of step six. Harry Taylor, Kent County, Prem. James Dyer's had a terrible time recently since he's been playing senior football, look where he's at. These players are not superstars that have come down here for the money, they're players that work for a team. You just look for them all. Callum McGeegan, Colossus, Tom Ash through the youth team. It's hard to name them all. Milo again, like I said, Milo's come from Wellington. He's proved a few people wrong. And yeah, look, you've got people like James Dyer, Harry Taylor in your team, you're going to get chances. Ollie Milton, 20-odd goals. Look, Harrison Carnegie, still life in the old dog yet there. But no, I can't keep naming them all. George Goodwin again. But listen, I'll name them all, but they've been brilliant.
I've just spoken to Mackenzie, and he said he was always confident with penalties. Were you backing him?
Yeah, all day long. I knew him.
And just finally, it's now raining very hard here on the pitch. But I know it was a lot of people have put a lot of work to get this game on today here.
Yeah, full credit to them.
Massive reward to them.
Full credit. And that is, it goes to everyone. They're not just here today getting it on. They work their bollocks off 24/7 for this football club.
And the club's in a great place now, and it's in the Isthmian League.
It is. Brilliant. And I'm so, like I said, I'm so proud. So proud of these players. And yeah, that's two things up to a few people who don't think we're very good.
An absolutely amazing achievement for them, Matt. Massive credit to the people at the club who worked so hard to get that game on in the awful weather on Monday. And I know that there were serious doubts about it. But what a reward they got. The way that club has built up with their excellent youth system over the past few years is absolutely fantastic. And they've got their reward now, haven't they?
Yeah. Shame somebody had to lose, but what a season they've had there. Was the pitch in bad condition? You thought it was going to be called off when you went there, John, did you say?
Do you know what? When I got there, actually, it was in better condition than I thought it was going to be, because I had people, hello, Nigel and Dean, who were texting me saying the weather up here is awful from the very outset. And I know that Mark, the chairman at Erith, was off getting a super soaker to help with the pitch. And when I left Tunbridge Wells to head on up there, the rain was unbelievable. I mean, it was. If the game had been played at the Culverden, we wouldn't have been playing. It was. I mean, it was absolutely pelting it down there. But as I got up in towards the sort of M25 area, it did start to ease off a little bit. It was still raining, but not heavily. And to be honest, given all the doom and gloom I'd heard, I actually thought the pitch played really well. And I was on the pitch carrying out interviews at the end of it, and it was, you know, it was in pretty good. Nick, given the amount of rain that had fallen, as Adam Woodward said there, the game, not a classic.
Two even sides?
Pretty much, yeah. It was, honestly, it was so much like the first game. And I thought the Corinthian goal was really well taken, a nice touch from Charlie Clover to send Hagen through. And he doesn't miss chances like that, Michael Hagen. The second half, Corinthian had a couple of chances at the start of the half. They hit the post. And then there was another chance that fell to Clover where he just couldn't quite get enough on it. And then it was like the Alamo, to be honest. Here with Town, we're just chucking the ball in the box. And Corinthian defended really well. I thought Jamie Billings was excellent. He was in the wars, as always, but he was getting his head on everything. He was a real leader for his team at the back. But then about 2 minutes before the goal, it looked like they'd scored. The keeper spilled across and it looked like it had gone in, but nothing was given. And then the goal, when it came, was just a sort of across from sort of 35 yards, but, you know, quite not out on the wing, but sort of central. And it just sort of went in. And as I say, I'm not sure if Harry Taylor got a touch on it or not, but it went in and sparked the world celebrations. The penalties were excellent. And do you know what? It was an even game, but probably at, on the second half performance, I'd say the Town shaded it, and they're good value for it. And do you know what? They've been knocking at the door, and you know, I spoke to the chairman after the game, and he said, you know, I don't know why people are surprised at our success, and I'm certainly not surprised at it, because, you know, every time we've had them on, I've been so impressed by Adam. I've obviously seen his team play a couple of times. You could see what they're trying to do. And the fact that they've built those players, you know, they've brought the young players in, as he's mentioned there. You know, they've got players who are in their early 20s, who've played hundreds of games at step five. They've earned this here with Town with what they've done. They've really, really done a phenomenal job. You know, they moved to Bayliss Avenue at the start of the season, and I've only been there once.
Thames Meads old ground, isn't it?
Thames Meads old ground, yeah. I've only been there once before, but it felt like more of a football stadium to me on Monday than it did when I was there before. You know, they're packed in the people, but it didn't feel uncomfortable with there being so many people there. And, you know, fair play to them. And Adam Woodward as well, you know, he said he's had chances to move somewhere else, but he's an Erith Town man. Well, Erith Town are bloody lucky to have him, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, he came across really well in that interview. And again, you know, I think he was pleased at how they did it and maybe put some doubters wrong. But yeah, fantastic. Shame somebody had to lose. And I've asked this before. Why wasn't there an extra 30 minutes?
Well, so this is the thing. So I actually was told, I don't think I asked, but I was told this on Monday, that it was a decision made by the National FA that all Step 5 playoff games are 90 minutes and straight to pens. I don't know how it would have played out if there'd been an extra 30 minutes, because I think, you know, it was the pitch was maybe getting heavier, and I think players were getting tired because they'd put so much into it. Both sides had, you know, and that's the rules. And I suppose everyone knew that. And you know, we've seen.
Do you think they should have an extra, you know, to get promoted, rather than having the lottery of penalties, that they should have had the extra 30 minutes?
I think I can see it for the final. I can see for the semi-finals, it's a hard sell. When you've got a semi-final on Tuesday and a final on the Monday, or in other divisions even earlier, I can see why it would go straight to pens in the semi. But yeah, maybe in the final, it would be the right decision. But, you know, Erith Town, as I say, Matt, a really well-run club. And Mark has put his heart and soul into that club, the chairman. And you know, delighted with him in everything that he's done. And you know, some of the players... the one who always stands out for me whenever I see them is James Dyer. Tricky sort of midfielder, winger. He's chipped in with a lot of goals this season, and he's always a threat. And, you know, it's very interesting when Adam said there, you know, let's hope we can keep the players together because there'll be money at step five. And hopefully they want to come and play the level. And I hope that, you know, that those players that have got Erith Town into this situation stick around and have the crack at it that they fully deserve, because they have been brilliant. You know, I don't think anyone would have expected them to get promoted this season. And I think they like that underdog tag, and I think they'll take that with them next season as well. And I can assure you that there'll be some teams in step four who will probably go to Bayliss Avenue thinking, oh, this will be all right. And they'll get a very rude awakening.
Well, exactly. I think we've known that sides have done well once they get promoted. So I'll look to see that. And interestingly, so you mentioned there, some players will be interested in if, maybe I think what Adam's built up there, the loyalty from that.
I don't think you can take anything away from the job that he's done in galvanising that group of players, because, you know, as I said to him when I spoke to him on Good Friday, and when I said to him, you know, the last 6 weeks have been incredible. The best 6 weeks in the history of that club. They've won three cup finals and one of them's got them promotion. And I think, you know, it's every credit to him as a manager for the way that he's got those players seen on the same hymn sheet, getting out there, winning games of football and keep on plugging away. You know, I think that's the thing. You have to be relentless at this stage of the season if you're going to do what they've done and basically win a treble. You have to keep on going and never let up. And that's what they've done. You know, there was a time a few weeks ago when there was still a possibility they might not have got in the playoffs. Yet they've managed to keep going, got into playoffs, had to go to Glebe in the first game, won that one. And then they go and win the final as well against the Corinthian side, who are always hard to beat, as I said to him there. You know, and you know, as I say, fair play to him. And, you know, I hope he has a lovely wedding in the summer. And it was great to see him with his wife and young children celebrating as they had done on Good Friday. Because, as he says, you know, there's been a lot of sacrifices gone into that. But I'm sure he's still on cloud nine right now.
Oh, yeah. Make the most of it. Again, hard work starts there. I like the bit where he said, at least the season starts a week later. So the joys of going up the level, you don't have to start in July.
Yeah. And so and his wedding's at the back end of July as well. Yeah. So there you go. But while there were winners, there also had to be a loser on Monday. And that was Corinthian, who just missed out on an instant return to the Isthmian League. Afterwards, I spoke to their boss, Michael Golding, started by asking about losing on spot kicks 6 days after beating Faversham on them. And there's a little extra at the end of this one as well.
It's the best way to win and the worst way to lose. I think first and foremost, credit to Erith Town, cup double promotion through the playoffs, like unbelievable effort from Woody and the boys there. But yeah, it's Tuesday was incredibly good. I thought we were fantastic and I thought we played well today, to be honest. It was always going to be a scrappy game. Like you look back to the cup final and it was an awful game of football. I think today was probably marginally better. But Erith Town do what Erith Town do. They wear you down. They keep putting balls in the box. Taylor puts himself about. And when you bring in players off the bench with the quality of Brad Ryan, like they're going to get their chances. And it was whether we could hang on. Second half, I thought we had chances. We've hit the post. But we similar to the cup final, we just camped in. We couldn't quite get out. And then when we did, we didn't make enough of it. So, yeah, listen, we're gutted. We've gone through 40 league games. I'm gutted that we missed our 2 points per game target, finishing on 79, which sticks with me, and it shouldn't, but it does. And then, yeah, today we've just fallen on the wrong side of it again, and you're looking for the footballing gods, and it's just, yeah, it's a tough one to take.
The game itself, I thought, you know, it's difficult when you go 1-0 up, isn't it? Especially away from home with a decent crowd in cheering on the other team. I guess you automatically tend to sit deeper. And I could see you up off your drinks carrier, calling the players to get forward. But I suppose it's so difficult, isn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the one criticism that I had from the cup final, is that we camped in and that was wind and everything else affected it. But what we said today at half time was just don't try and stay out as much as you can. And it's so hard because they're putting the ball in from 60, 70 yards. The goalkeeper's kicking it 100 yards and it's dropping in and around the edge of the area. And again, for I don't know what the time the goal was, 80 odd minutes, I thought we did well with it. We defended pretty much everything. And then it's just the one that we didn't quite get right. We didn't clear it with enough distance or height. And then it comes straight back in the box. And like I say, it's a decent ball. And a lot of people won't like that kind of goal. But fair play, like it's a good ball into a good area that's asked the question. So, yeah, it was, when you get that close, it's so disappointing. But, yeah, eventually I'll watch it back and see what we could have done better and then reflect on that.
Your goal was a superb touch and a superb finish.
Yeah, really pleased. It was what we thought we could isolate. They're quite a static back four. They're good at what they do, but we felt with a bit of pace up there that we could cause them problems. And Michael Hagan, he's been in and out of the side, but he scores goals in big games and he's come up trumps. But it was a lovely little ball from Charlie. And then once Michael's running through, you back him more often than not.
And he defended really well. And I know you've had some disappointing results the last few weeks. But to throw the bodies on the line the way that they did was something else.
Yeah, I mean, we've been so inconsistent the last 6 weeks. It's been really frustrating. We've just really struggled for any kind of form and any kind of consistency. But the performance on Tuesday against Faversham was outstanding. We deserved that. We were fantastic. And the penalties were world class. And then the flip side today, we were brilliant again. I thought like we took our chance. We created, like I said, three or four good chances, and Oscar's hit the post, and we just needed that second goal because I just felt that would kill him. And then the penalties today just weren't up to the right standards. And listen, it's rubbish when it goes like that.
How do you pick up Oscar and Sam? Sam looked particularly upset at the end.
Yeah, I think it's tough. Listen, whenever you miss a penalty, it's tough. But I said in the huddle at the end, Sam and Oscar, they would be on my first five every single time. Like, I'd back them every single time. If we went into penalty shootout tomorrow, I'd put their names down straight away. It's going to hurt them now. It's going to hurt all the boys. But they're the ones who have put their hands up. They took Oscar's penalty on Tuesday night. It was sensational. It's gone in the top corner. And maybe we've overthought it. Like, we tried not to talk about it too much at training on Thursday and Saturday. We just said, obviously, the videos are out there. Like, maybe we over-egged that. But listen, if we'd done exactly the same thing as Tuesday night, then we would have been frustrated. We hadn't mentioned it. So, no, Jamie's put away a great penalty. Sally's penalty squirmed its way in. So, for as good as our penalties were on Tuesday night, they weren't particularly great today across the board.
The season as a whole, if I'd said to you in July we'd be standing here on the pitch after the playoff final, would you have believed it?
No, absolutely not. I was talking to Sue, the secretary, yesterday, and I think we as a management team, and we've said this for loads and loads of times, that we weren't quite sure what we were going to do. We weren't sure if we were going to carry on, if we weren't sure if it was time to look elsewhere, or if we were going to have the right players. And Alfie and everyone behind the scenes has worked incredibly hard. But I think when we had the meeting at the chairman's house, and we decided we were going to give it a go, and originally we said we'll give it 10 games and see where we're at after that, and I wasn't convinced, and the management team, we ummed and ahed, and we decided it was the right thing. But we went into the start of the season with one player. We went in with Jamie Billings, and we've recruited, and some players have come back, and I think once we committed, other players then committed. The season as a whole is horrible now. It's raw, it hurts, but I think what the boys can reflect back on, it's incredibly tough. And what, more than anything, what these group of boys have been through with Cam and everything else, is it will bring them together. And I remember you saying on the pod, like, sometimes that brings teams together. And that's got us through, 100% it's got us through at times. And I'm all right after the game. It's football, it's one of those things. And then I see Cam's dad and Cam's nan, and then I break down. It's incredibly tough. I just wanted to win so much for them. Absolutely desperate to win for them being here today. I think once the raw emotion disappears, I think we'll all reflect back and say not one person gave us a chance this season. There was people predicting pre-season stuff, saying we'd be mid-table at best, and we didn't know. When I saw that we'd finished 12th, I thought I'd take that at the start of the year. And then we sneak into the playoffs, and winning two away games is always a big ask. We were just so close.
And how do you bounce back now? Do you want another crack at it next year?
We'll need to see. I think Woody summed it up after the cup final, when you start talking about time away from your loved ones, and the kids are growing up and all that kind of stuff. And it was probably a bit of an ego thing this year. Did we want to drop back down to the scaffold after 2 years at step four? Probably not. And we've probably spoke about the quality of the level. And listen, we've come up short overall. Do we want to have another go? Listen, it's very raw. I think this year was about, can we rebuild a side, and can we prove to everyone how good we are at Skeffel, and can we show everyone that we know how to win games of football at Skeffel? And I think for the most part we've done that. The alternative argument is that we've not won anything, not done anything. But I think if people reflect back that what we've done again, like, we've rebuilt a side from nothing, we've paid absolutely no money all season, we've competed with all the big hitters, we've done better than, I said the other day, the team spending money from 6 down to 10, 11. It's astronomical amounts of money. And like, I've got no issue with money being spent, and fair play, teams are trying to improve their players and their pitches and their grounds and their facilities. Like, it's going to make Kent football better. But in terms of us, I don't know. I'll sit down with Paul and the management team. I'll sit down with Sophie, and we'll try and work it out where to go forwards. But 10 years, nine and a half, 10 years, over 400 games. That's why my hair looks like this. We'll wait and see. It's raw at the moment, but it's there's some decisions to be made.
Yeah, it's been amazing. You know, a year ago in the summer, we really weren't sure what we was going to do. You know, Michael wasn't sure whether he could, you know, face another year in the scaffold after being in the Ryman. And we done well in the Ryman. We really didn't know what sort of team we'd be able to get together. And it really was a flip of a coin whether we carried on or not. And we decided to give it a go. We done trials in the summer. And, you know, Michael's been amazing. You know, the team he's put together, he's managed to get, you know, some of the boys back. Oscar coming back was a great bonus. Brandon coming back was a bonus. Having Billo around, you know, he's been fantastic. But the job Michael does, I think, you know, he's, so many people don't appreciate what a great job he does. You know, he's competed with Craivaddy over the years. He's competed with Sheppey. He's competed with Chatham. And this year, you know, we've competed with Faversham and, you know, a lot of other teams who obviously got very, very healthy budgets. And, you know, there's no secret, we don't pay our players here. And it's been amazing. You know, we could have come out with a couple of trophies. We could have got promoted if things had, you know, had gone the other way. But it's been an amazing season. It's really disappointing today. But I'd say Michael's done a tremendous job.
What is it about Michael? Is it his man management? Is the way he's obviously cultivated such a great togetherness, which he did with one team that got promoted,
yeah.
And he's done it again with this team as well.
Yeah, he works hard. We always train twice a week. A lot of clubs at this level don't, you know, don't train twice a week. Some of them don't train once a week. But we very seldom give boys a night off. Michael wants the boys in. We get a really good team spirit together. I think he's an intelligent manager as well. He knows how to set teams up. He knows how to play to our strengths. You know, we know maybe we haven't got as, you know, technical players as other teams, but we set teams up to make it difficult. We work harder. And I think, you know, the quality does come through at times as well. So, you know, I think he knows how to set a team up which is going to be hard to beat. And teams don't like to play against Michael's teams because of that fact that we work so hard. And that's a quality in itself that players are willing to run through brick walls for someone like Michael.
Assistant manager Paul Sawyer brings that interview to a close there with some words on Michael Golding, who, as always, Matt, spoke so well there, despite massive disappointment for him and his side. A really tough one to take, and I'm sure he's still hurting now.
Yeah, I think interesting point there. What I think, is this a bigger achievement, arguably, what they've achieved this is when they got promoted those a few years ago, when he mentioned they didn't know if he was going to do it. He carried on, really enjoyed it. And then so close, you know, a penalty kick competition away of getting promoted, which should have been an unbelievable achievement. So clearly he's got some thinking to do what he's going to do again. Has he got it in him to go again? Managing 400 games at that level, does he want to test himself at a higher level? So, yeah, I think every time he comes on, he's very great with the show. So with the information and always coming on. So I feel for him a bit there. But now, Corinthian, again, decision to make. Has he got the hunger? Does he want to go again? Because again, he can do. They will be successful again, I'm sure. So, and also finally, I have to say, what a great invention the playoffs is for this division as well. I think it's really brought the league to a really good level and exciting climax to the season. And I'm absolutely delighted with the Skeffel doing this. And again, Skeffel is our favourite league to report on with all the goals and all the action. So fantastic season for all concerned with the Skeffel. And I feel for Michael, but Corinthian should held their heads up high for what has been a fantastic season.
Yeah, and I think as Paul Sawyer said there, you know, Michael does a fantastic job. And you know, regular listeners to this show know that I get on really well with Michael. I'd call him a friend because we've, you know, built a relationship through this podcast, you know, and we're frequently texting each other about bits and pieces. And obviously, you know, really hard for him. But, you know, he did make a good point there, you know, where he said about, you know, my kids are getting older. Do I want to be spending every Saturday, every Tuesday? And as Paul Sawyer said there, you know, every Thursday, we never miss a training session. He's so dedicated to it. And, you know, he's only 35, so he could easily take a few years away from the game and still come back and have a good long managerial career because, you know, it's a difficult one. And you know, I don't know what he's going to do as he goes on. I'm sure that at some point...
Football, I'd say, John, football's a drug, though, isn't it? Which are in that... Now, you know, you want to, again, right the wrongs of what's been this season as well, thinking about it. So, yeah, big decision to make, but I appreciate that. With a young family, it must be difficult. And I think both managers said there, you know, fair play to their other halves and kids and things there. Even managing at this level, you know, takes a hell of a lot out of you with another job as well. So, fair play to them there to decide what he's going to do.
Absolutely. It's doubly hard for people like Michael and Steve King and others who are teachers because your main summer holiday starts at the back end of July and then the football season starts at the back end of July. So the actual time where you get to have that break and that time with your family is very small window, you know, and that's where I think it becomes a real issue of commitment. But, you know, only Michael knows what he's going to do this season. He'll sit down and I know he'll make the decision that's best for him and the football club that he's been with for so long. You know, I know that he would not want to go into that job again and be half-assed about it. He would want to go in there. He would only want to carry on if he's going to be able to commit and do the absolute best that he can, because he's that sort of bloke. And, you know, if he decides that now's the time to call it a day, then that'll be the right decision for him and probably for the club, because that will be the thought process that's going on with him. As I say, you know, I always appreciate his time. I know people say, oh, he's our favourite interview and we love having him on the show. But, you know, he's just a nice guy. And you know, there's so many nice guys in Kent football. And he is definitely one of them. And I hope that he has cheered up a little bit, and that he's in and that he is in the right place to make the right decision for him, his family and his football club.
Yeah, fair play. Yeah. Great season with Skeffer, that's all I'd say.
Brilliant, yeah. There was, of course, one other playoff winner at the weekend, and it was the third time lucky for Larkfield and New Hythe in the Skeffer Division 1 playoffs, as they beat Staples Monarchs 1-0 with 828 in attendance. It was the perfect finale to a first full season in charge for Danny Lye, and I spoke to the Larks boss earlier today.
Yeah, it's really good, actually. Yeah, that was our target for the season, and we've achieved it. So everyone's happy. The club's gone to a place it's never been before, and both chairmen have got good ambitions, so yeah, we've done well.
Yeah, a tight old game against Staples, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. It wasn't the prettiest of games, but often or not, them sort of games are like that. They're quite a tough unit to break down. They're very direct, they're very physical. And to be honest, we dropped down to their level rather than trying to play football, a few nerves and stuff, but we got the result we needed.
But was it? Was there a lot of pressure on you on Saturday? You say it was the aim was to get promoted this season, and obviously you were at home, you were the favourites, there was a big crowd in there. Was there pressure on you to win the game?
There's always pressure. I as one, I don't really feel the pressure or feel the stress on sort of games like that. I've been in them sort of situations quite a few times before as a player. I don't really feel it, but some of the other players, yeah, of course they felt the pressure. The two chairmen were definitely stressed out about it. So a few nerves in the team, but rightly so. But we've got a squad, a lot of them have won the league above and won a lot of things. So their experience got the others through. But pressure-wise, yeah, pressure for the club, because we don't want to be in the Skeffer 1 again, because it's not the greatest of leagues. It's quite tough to get out of. And, yeah, we want to progress. So
I suppose as well, you know, it's obviously been a good few years for the club. I know you've not been there the whole time, but ever since they come into the Skeffer First Division, the club has done well, and I guess getting over the line finally must be a big relief for everybody.
Yeah, definitely. Third time lucky for the club. I mean, they've lost the last 2 years, I think it was, in the playoffs. Last year we came in sort of two games before the playoffs, so there was not the same sort of feeling or emotion involved, because it wasn't our squad. But yeah, they've got what they've wanted now. They've invested in the club. The grounds, it's a nice little facility, and their aim was always to get promoted. And it's taken a long season of sort of re-educating them into what's got to happen to get there. And they've jumped on board with it.
Looking at a lot of playoffs up and down the country, not a lot of teams who finished in the top playoff place have won the playoffs. So well done to you, I suppose.
Yeah, definitely. There's always that problem. I mean, we finished the season strong. We hit good form. A challenge. We lost the game. We lost badly to Erith in a cup. And I challenged the boys for their desire and how much they want it. Are they playing for the club? And we went on a really good run at the end. Got ourselves the home playoff spot. The chairman was desperate to play it at home. We wasn't too worried where we played it. But because of the spectacle in the end with all the fans and stuff and how many people turned up, it was a great day for the club.
You've said already that there's good ambition at the club, so I suppose the aim is to not just settle for being in the Skeffer Prem, but to push on.
Yeah, of course, yeah, they want to challenge. I'm the type of guy, I'm finishing 18th and just clinging on. I don't find any passion or desire in that. I want to push again. So, yeah, reality with money and constraints and stuff obviously counts. But yeah, we want to be aiming for the playoffs next year, and we've proved already with the squad we had this year that we can play against them teams in the higher leagues. We've done well against, other than Erith, we've done well against Corinthians, Faversham, Glebe. We was unlucky in a couple of games, but yeah, we can match it against the top ones.
I know, obviously, you know, the teams that have gone up from the Skeffer fully deserved it, but is there a part of you looking at it thinking, oh, Faversham again, because they're going to surely come with the big budget again, and that must make it harder for everybody?
of course, it makes it hard. Obviously, big budget brings a big squad, good players. But as you've seen this year, they fouled. They didn't achieve what they wanted to. So it's not everything, but it certainly helps. But I mean, I have many battles with Favre Sherman. Obviously, Tommy Warrelow being the manager and stuff. We know him well, me and Mickey. Yeah, it's gonna be a tough season.
Disappointed not to make it a double in the cup final last night as well, I suppose.
Yeah, disappointing. We had a bit of a hangover from the from Saturday's game, which I thought we might. We had a lot of walking wounded. We had five changes, I think, to the starting lineup last night, which affects us. Big players were tired. That we had knocks, and a few still had hangovers. Like literally proper hangovers from the weekend. So we got what we deserved out of the game, really. And our priority was promotion, but last night I had a go at my half time. I had a dig at them and said, come on, where's their mentality? But it wasn't to be.
I suppose the hard work starts now, does it, with looking ahead to next season?
It does, yeah. Everyone's already talking about pre season friendlies and squads and budgets and stuff. It does already start now, which I was talking to Mickey just now. It takes a lot of your time up, sort of, this part of the season where everybody else is relaxing. You're building your squad and getting everything organised. So, yeah, lots of hard work ahead.
You'd been out of the management game for a little while. What was it about Larkford and Uhai that tempts you to come back in?
Well, I lived quite close to Larkfield. I played for their Sunday team many moons ago, every now and again, if I didn't have a game on a Saturday. So I knew the club quite well. When I watched a few games, literally when I didn't have anything to do, when I watched a few games, and then at the end of last year, when they approached me, it was sort of, okay, the time's right to sort of step back in. It's been hard, obviously got kids and stuff, so, and work, commitments, and it's been nice not being involved in the football, but you've always got that scratch to itch, haven't you? So,
you took the words out of my mouth, I was going to say, did you really miss it when you weren't doing it?
Yes and no. I enjoyed my weekends, seeing my little girl and stuff on a Saturday and being able to go away whenever you want, that part's very nice. But since I haven't been doing it, when I was manager at Ashford, I was manager, like assistant manager or joint manager, whatever you want to call it, my son's under 18 team at Kings Hill. And we took them at the end of last year. It was their last year before they become sort of men over the under 18s. And so it was a good step, really. I said to my son, I didn't want to do that anymore. And it was just sort of a nice little transition.
Perfect. And just finally, you know, a job well done. And as you say, that the hard work starts now, and looking forward to July already.
It does, yeah. We delivered the promise. We're quite outspoken, me and Mickey. We promised them we'd get them up first time round. At one stage, it looked like we'd overspoken. But, yeah, it's come good. And now, yeah, it's just planning now for next year. And next year's a better league. You know, more players in it. You know, our teams are going to set up in the league we've just come out of. It's very difficult to understand what formation or who's going to play because there's so many changes.
Well, that attendance there, Matt, on Saturday certainly shows the potential that the club's got. And Danny Lye's got high hopes for next season already.
Yeah, Danny Lye's a brass from the past. Remember him running midfields back in the day? Yeah, fantastic. Seemed a bit of a tough game, strong game after what the Staplehurst did in the previous game. But yeah, come through, 830-odd, you said. Yeah, and now see what they can do in the main division. Interesting what he's managed before, come down to this level, clearly worked hard and got promotion. So, again, plenty of sides around the Maidstone area as well, isn't there? So, interesting to see how they're going to do. But, yeah, fantastic for them, really, I have to say. Great. And Danny Lye was a good player and he ran midfields back in the day. And I'm glad that he's given something back to the game as well.
Yeah, it was interesting, actually. We were just talking about in the last section when we were talking about Michael Golding, but Danny Lye was one of the guests on our fourth episode of this programme. We're now on 296. So, I mean, that's nearly 8 years ago that he left Ashford. And, you know, he's gone on and he's stepped away from the game. But I've always remembered him because genuinely that fourth show, I think, was the first time we phoned anybody up to get him on the show and sort of see how that would go. And, you know, that kind of really grew the seed of this podcast and made it into what it's become today. And, you know, it's phenomenal. I've always remembered that. But as he said there, you know, I had a good time away from it. It was nice having my weekends and being able to go away and bits and pieces. But ultimately, I wanted to get back into it. And this opportunity came up. And, you know, you're going to have a club with good ambition. And that's exactly what Larkfield and New Hythe are. And you say there's a lot of clubs in and around that Maidstone area. Actually, at step 4 and 5, it's not that congested, is it? It's step 6 where there's a lot of teams. But step 4, there's no one in that sort of area. And then step 5, you've got Bearside and Snodland, of course, are there. Just down the road. So there's a real opportunity for Larkfield. You know, there's a lot of houses around there, a lot of potential people who could go and watch a game of football. And, you know, if they get lucky with the fixtures and they're opposite weekends to Maidstone, when Maidstone are down at Truro or Torquay or anything like that, then there's no reason why people won't go and watch Larkfield. If they're going to score goals, which they've done, they've scored a lot of goals, and they've got ambitions of pushing into the top five of that division next season, then that's going to be an appealing place to go watch a game of football, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. Again, Danny Lye. Yeah, I like him again, it'd be interesting to see the levels. It was the step up between these two, the two leagues. I think Danny Lye will know the levels I've been played at before, what a player needs to do. So I'll be intrigued how they get on, and delighted that a Kent side got promoted as well at the end of the day. So shame to Staplehurst missed out, but fair play to Larkfield.
Yeah, and obviously you go back to last week's interview with Staplehurst, where he said, you know, we make ourselves hard to beat. And it, by the sounds of it, that's exactly what they did on Saturday. An own goal eventually decided that game as well. So pretty tight affair. But I'm sure Larkfield don't actually give a monkeys about how they won the game as long as they won it. Yeah.
Well, I've been saying this. I see the, again, changing the subject a little bit. But the whole manager was sacked. He didn't play attacking football, Rossignol. I think they finished 7th. Really good season for them. And my idea is football is all about winning. So however you get there, well, it doesn't really matter as long as you continue to win. So fair play to Larkfield, and we look forward to covering them next season when they're in the big scaffold, which, you know, Danny Lye up against Tommy Warrilow. Again, we're getting old when those two are on the opposite sides of the managerial after seeing them both as players as well.
I think that was an interesting one, actually, and I was quite keen to ask him that about, you know, the fact that Faversham stayed down. Does that make the division potentially harder? And that's not to take away anything from either Town, Deal Town, who would still have been very confident. But I don't think anyone else is going to splash the cash like Faversham did this season. And if they do that again next season, then that makes it doubly hard, doesn't it?
Yeah, I think, again, I would have thought that Faversham aren't going to... You would have thought under Tommy Warrilow, they will be a little bit more focused on right how we can go and win this league. But other teams will still try and raise their game against it. And they can see, right, what happened last year. There's no reason why, again, half a dozen sides can think, right, we pipped Faversham were pipped last season. We can do it again.
Absolutely. And we will look how that all pans out next season. This time next year, who knows who'll have won the scaffold. And that is the beauty of non-league football. That is all the playoff news dealt with. But we do have some other bits of news to bring you. Let's start in the Eastman League South East. Well, Ben Smith is to stay on at Ramsgate. Both Joe Taylor and Tom Hadler have already signed on the dotted line to stay with them as well. Our other beaten Eastman League South East playoff semi-finalists, Sittingbourne, are on the lookout for a new boss after Ryan Maxwell resigned, with an opportunity closer to home coming his way at a yet-to-be-announced club. He said it was a really difficult decision to move on. He did a brilliant job at Sittingbourne, didn't he, Matt? And I spoke to him, I think, 3 or 4 times for the show. Always a really good interviewee. And I wish him well wherever he ends up. But now the task is for Sittingbourne. Follow that, because that is going to be quite the effort, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think Ryan Maxwell managed to bring in players, no disrespect to Sittingbourne, that they probably wouldn't have got if Ryan Maxwell wasn't the manager. So the challenge will be to maybe replace them if they follow him to an ex-Conference North side, and we're led to believe he's going to.
And that was it down.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, so those players will, again, big changes for Sittingbourne. Got to get the right managerial situation, and they will look to go on what they did this season. I know they gave him some good resources. It'd be interesting to see if the new manager, whoever that may be, is given those resources. But I've got a funny feeling it could be a bit of a rebuild for Sittingbourne next season.
Yeah, and obviously Ryan Maxwell was very much, you know, really tried to galvanise the town and the supporters as well, you know, putting money behind the bar for the supporters to have a drink, and, you know, saying, if you get this many people coming into the stadium, I'll buy you all a drink. You know, and I think that is part of the challenge at Sittingbourne is maintaining that and making sure that the crowds keep coming. So they need to get someone else in who has that ability that Ryan Maxwell had to bring the town together behind the team. And ultimately, as we all know, if you've got a winning team, people will come and watch it. So that's the big task for the whoever the new Sitting Bull manager is. Win games of football, but I suppose that's a task for any manager, isn't it?
Yeah. Sitting Bull, can they support an Isthmian Premier League club? We'll have to wait and see. But if he can keep this, again, I just feel it could be a big challenge for the new manager coming in to maybe rebuild a squad. So yeah, we'll look forward to see what their retain list and who comes and who goes when the new manager's appointed.
Absolutely. Elsewhere, Steve O'Boyle was today announced his resignation from Phoenix Sports, saying that reduced budget would make it impossible for the club to compete next season. A couple of his players have already announced that they're on their way as well, because he said he couldn't even keep the players that he had at his disposal this season. So Ryan Hayes come out straight away and said, you know, I've moved on. It's been a brilliant blast. I've enjoyed it. If they're reducing the budget, Matt, it's going to be quite the task, because Steve O'Boyle has done an absolutely incredible job there over the past 2 and a bit years, hasn't he?
Yeah, that's a little bit concerning. We've seen a lot of sides on the up, increasing budgets and looking to go for it. Clearly, Phoenix have decided, right, we're just going to cut our cloth accordingly. And I admire Steve for saying that, really, that maybe it's he doesn't want to get involved. You know, he did a really good job keeping them up, and he wouldn't be able to do it again next season. I'm sure he'll be on the lips of many a chairman trying to get a job when he comes in. But fair play to him. I think it's, you know, I think he's earned the right to say, right, we need to do a bit better with the budget, and if it's cut, we're going to struggle.
I wonder if losing the ground share has played a part in that as well. So obviously, Wellington have said they're moving on from their ground share at Phoenix Sports. Does that mean that they've got less of a budget in there? I don't know. But obviously, they've decided to see if they can go with a lesser budget and see what happens. But we know the Isthmian League South East is going to be a tough old league next year. There's some good Kent sides in there. And actually, do you know what? I actually think Erith, not too far away from Phoenix Sports, coming up, is going to make things even tougher for Phoenix Sports. But we shall see what happens there. More Isthmian League South East news as well, where Hythe Town have got a new chairman, a familiar name as well, the former Sheppey United chairman, Matt Smith. I actually saw him on Monday, and it was good to catch up with him. And I'm sure the club, who've got former chair Gary Johnson staying on as well, in pretty good shape for next season under Sammy Moore, who I also briefly chatted with at Baylor Sabney on Monday. Exciting times for Hythe, isn't it, Matt?
Yeah, I really like my time going to Hythe this season. Really good people there. Matt Smith, I saw him, he came to a couple of games at Crabble earlier in the season as well, so didn't speak to him, but I saw him at Crabble. Did a great job at Sheppey, and if he can get, I think Hythe, you know, some good people there, good season last year, clearly a bit of extra budget, if he can put it that way, or maybe with extra sponsorship, they can look to be at the right end of the table after missing out on the playoffs this season, particularly after last season. Yeah, exciting times, what I thought, for Hythe. And good to see Gary Johnson hanging on as well, because his heart's in the right place for that club. Yeah, onwards and upwards, I would say, for Hythe.
Yeah, and it'd be interesting to see if they do something about the pitch as well, because that's been one of their biggest problems over the last couple of years. But, you know, if they can get that pitch sorted so that they don't have so many problems with games being called off, you know, that will be a good start for them. And as I say, you know, if you look at a club that's got the former Sheppey United chairman and Sammy Moore as the manager, and Gary Johnson in the background as well, it's in pretty good hands. So
yeah, I think before, big season for Sammy Moore as well. He's got to stay somewhere, build his reputation back up. Hythe can be the club who can do it. If he gets backed by Matt Smith, there's no reason why, you know, we can see what Matt Smith did in the scaffold, got Sheppey's gates up, and I'm sure he'll be doing the same thing, going into the community, trying to get Hythe's gates up as well.
Absolutely. One more bit of managerial news from the scaffold, this one. With Glebe announcing their new manager, is Fred Dillon is their first team manager. He'll be assisted by Chris Stedman. Fred has got connections with the club for over 15 years, Glebe said in a social media post earlier on today, and has signed a 2-year contract to be the manager at Glebe for starting from now, I assume. Was the SC Thamesmead at the back end of the season, helped keep them up? It's a step up to be at Glebe, but he knows what he's getting himself in for. An interesting appointment, Matt.
Yeah. They've gone through some managers, I think, for a while, Glebe. So a bit of a stability, giving him a 2-year contract shows what maybe they've got. They particularly rate him and giving him an opportunity. Let's hopefully they can carry on. They're the benchmark of last season, or this season that's just finished, getting into the playoffs. And I'm sure they'll look forward to it next season, and good luck to him. we'll look forward to speaking to him next season.
100%. It'll be really good to see how they shape up. And, you know, we always love it this time of year because everyone's starting to think that next year could be their year. And who knows how that will go. Now, we did tell you last week that this was going to be the last show of the season, but it's a treat for you all. We're going to do one more for you before we pack it up for the summer. So next week, a full-on review of the season is coming your way. And we want your nominations for your Player of the Year, your Manager of the Year and your Moment of the Year. So let us know your thoughts on social media, on Twitter /X at Kent NL Podcast, on Facebook, search for Kent Nonley Podcast, or get yourself in the group Kent Nonley Football Chat. I will put a post in there asking for your nominations, but yeah, let us know who's really stood out for you, what moments you've really enjoyed. There's a bloody hell of a lot to choose from for that one, but yeah, do let us know everything that you've enjoyed over the course of 2023-24, because we will be back next week for one more show. We will go for it, but before we go, Matt, is there anything else you want to talk about with Mrs. G out tonight? I assume your evening plans just involve watching the football, yeah?
Yeah, I've got it on in the background. It's 0-0 in my game. Is it? Are you watching the playoffs? Any goals in that?
It's Peterborough 1, Oxford 1. Peterborough scored to level it up on aggregate. And then Oxford, a minute ago, had a free kick right on the edge of the box, drilled it into the penalty area. And the Peterborough defender went with his arm to block it in front of his face. And the ref gave a penalty, which was safely tucked away. So 2-1 to Oxford on aggregate, that one. It's just gone half time. So by the time everybody hears this, they'll know the result. But I love the playoffs. Always have. Always will.
We watched. Have you seen Red Eye? I've told you about Red Eye. What a load of drivel that is. Don't watch it.
Okay.
That's it. But apart from that, that's all I've been watching. Because, like I said, at this time of the year, there's football on all the time. And I'm thinking, can I watch, you know, the Champions League gets exciting. Other leagues get exciting. You think, oh, I just want to watch football. So with the wife out, it worked perfectly. I could do the pod and watch football in the background.
Yeah, do you know what? We finished a second series of Slow Horses over the weekend. Oh. And I've got something to say.
That's the plane one, isn't it?
The plane one. Yeah. And I'm not going to, there's no spoilers in this, what I say. But at one point, they all pile on a train which is going to Tunbridge Wells. Now, call me a loser if you want. At JohnFipps81, tell me I'm a loser. I want you to tell me I'm a loser. That train that they got on was not a Southeastern train, and that station they got off at was not bloody Sevenoaks. I don't know why they didn't just use Sevenoaks station or a Southeastern. Well, I know why they didn't use a Southeastern train, because probably if they wanted one to come on time, it wouldn't bloody turn up. But that's another matter. But it was, I was like sat there, and I know I'm a loser. I know I'm a geek, but I was like, well, Southeastern trains have got blue seats, not green seats. And like, that's not Sevenoaks station, because it's not a bloody, and the thing was, the train was going on from Sevenoaks. They got where it was going. They said Tunbridge, High Brooms, Tunbridge Wells, but then the Sevenoaks station that they used was at the end of the line. You know, I appreciate that maybe for logistical reasons you had to do that, but I'm not.
But apart from your moaning, it's a bloody good show.
Oh, it's absolutely incredible. Absolutely loved it.
Like, you watch the next one, you'll be like, oh my goodness.
Love it, because it keeps you guessing, you know, you never know what's happening, like, and we both really enjoyed it. I finished watching the next last episode quite late on Sunday evening, and it was like getting close to bedtime and stuff, and I just said, should we watch the last one? And Fee just kind of looked at me and went, oh, we'll start it, and then the next thing you know, it's finished, because you just can't take your eyes.
You know, that's a good show when you do that, you just carry on watching one more. So
yeah, I did start watching, is it Granite Harbour? Have you seen that one on BBC?
No, there's quite a few.
I don't know about this one, because the second series is on now, but I don't remember ever hearing about it in the first place. So I've actually started watching from the first series. So I've started watching the first episode of the first series, and I quite enjoyed it. So that one's going to be on my list. It looks like it's sort of a good, well-thought-out drama. And, you know, some of the ones lately I've not had much of a feeling for, but I did enjoy the start of that one.
Oh, I've got to watch that thing about Wembley. When have you seen that on Netflix? There's the story of the final against Italy when people start trashing the ground and goes wrong, which would be quite. I'll probably watch that before next week, and we can maybe review that one.
Yeah, I might have a look at that one. Yeah, that sounds like it might be up my
strong. Anything planned for the weekend for you though, John? Now is there?
I don't know. Do you know what? I don't know what the plans are. We were thinking of staying in and watching Eurovision, as all the cool kids do. You know, all the hip young couples without kids. But now, because the weather's picked up, we're now thinking, should we just go to the beach?
Make the most of it. Yeah,
I'm only off on Saturday, so it's a bit frustrating. So I'm working, I've been off today, but I'm now working Thursday, Friday and Sunday. and then Monday, Tuesday as well. So got to make the most of my one day off this weekend. We've got a few other bits and pieces in the iron, irons in the fire and things to sort out. And you know, we were saying earlier on about the hot tub. While I'm asking, if anyone's got a house in the sort of Tunbridge Wells area they want to give us for nothing or a small fee, please let us know, because we're finding it a real bloody struggle, to be honest, at the moment, to find something in our price range, and also it's not going to bankrupt us with a mortgage. So, you know, if you don't ask, you don't get. So, you know, if you've got a nice house, two or three bedrooms, two parking spaces, and you're willing to flog it on the cheap, we'd be really interested. Yeah, please let us know on social media.
Well, exactly. It's what from I said, the wife's away, but the weather's supposed to be good, so we'll make the most of it. So and. Where you go, and the Premier League will be busy at work, John, with the Premier League coming to an end. Who's going to win it?
I still think it's Man City to lose, isn't it? I can't see Tottenham putting up too much of a fight when they play them in that game in hand next week. So, yeah, you would think, and City have got an excellent record at Craven Cottage. So you would expect City to pick up 6 points in their games this week. And then they'll be top going into a home game against West Ham with David Moyes' last game. So I think I'm probably going to say Man City are going to win the league, yeah.
There we go. Well, and we'll be back next week, John. Really, I suppose it's been a good another long show, but
absolutely
a good one. And fair play to all our teams that got promoted this weekend. But again, and we'll have the discussion again when you mention people who send their things in. Do you think this has been a successful season for our Kent sides? I'd like to know what people's opinions are. I've got an opinion if it's been successful for our sides, but I'd like to know what other people's opinions are.
Absolutely, yeah. Well, do let us know, as we say, on Twitter/X at Kent NL Podcast. On Facebook, search for Kent Nonleague Podcast and join the group, Kent Nonleague Football Chat, where I will put some threads in for your thoughts on the season, and we will discuss them at length next week. As we say, massive congratulations to the three teams who got promoted this week. Huge commiserations to the three who didn't get promoted in their finals. And thank you, of course, to all of our guests for joining us on this week's show. And another absolute cracker on those interviews. All killer, no filler, I would say, from that point of view. We've got no more football games to talk about, but we are going to come back and give you a full review of 2023-24. So we will speak to you all next week on the Kent Nonleague Podcast.
The bloody cheek of Bromley to leave us, eh? Well done, the Ravens.
Good pun that as well, isn't it, Michael Cheek?
Yeah, there you go.